Welcome back to Breaking Beltway. I'm your host, Jessica Chasmar, coming to you every Tuesday night from the lovely and corrupt Washington, D.C. I wanted to kick off tonight's show talking about the militarization of our local police. I've written several stories in the last few weeks about bad police behavior, and I think it's an important topic to discuss. What's equally, if not more important, is the amount and ability of force they've been given since 9/11. Under a national military surplus program, the Defense Department is giving armored vehicles and other heavy-duty military equipment, military-grade equipment, that was once used in Iraq. They're giving them to local enforcement agents, law enforcement agencies all over the country. 165 of these vehicles, which are meant to withstand an IED blast, have been distributed to the local police departments who wanted them, and more than 700 more have been requested. And the really interesting point to note about these purchases is that a disproportionate share of the military-grade property has been obtained by police departments in rural areas with few officers and very little crime. One was given to Ohio State University campus police to provide a police presence on football game days. And in Boise, Idaho, police reported using theirs 2 weeks ago to serve a warrant, an arrest warrant. In Albany County in New York, they already have four smaller military surplus Humvees. In Montgomery County, and this is not just, you know, armored vehicles. This goes for all sorts of different military-grade equipment. In Montgomery County, Texas, the sheriff's department owns a $300,000 stealth drone. In Augusta, Maine, where an officer hasn't died on the job in more than 100 years, police bought eight 1,500 tactical vests. And police in Des Moines, Iowa, bought two bomb-disarming robots. And an Arizona sheriff now owns a surplus army tank. Why do they need this stuff? We have to start asking why. And what we're seeing with the rise of equipment purchases is an increase in local SWAT teams. The organization that provides SWAT training says it currently has about 1,650 team memberships, and that's up 60% since 2000. You know, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but this really freaks me out. And the ACLU is already on it. The ACLU affiliates, they've been collecting 2012 records, and they're planning to issue a report for next year about these tactical purchases. And they say that this type of militarization, it has a tendency to escalate violence. Jessalyn McCurdy with the ACLU makes a good point. She says that with local law enforcement, their mission is to solve crimes after they've happened and to ensure that people's constitutional rights are protected in the process. The military obviously has a mission where they are fighting an enemy. When you use military tactics in the context of law enforcement, the missions don't match. And I tend to agree with her. And that's what we have to ask ourselves here. While these mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicles may be sold to communities as a practical benefit, they run the risk of helping establish a standing army. And then you have civilian officers wearing the equipment of American soldiers and maybe possibly even acquiring the mindset of that American soldier, of an army occupying, you know, a hostile environment. And then the American citizen is no longer seen as someone to protect and serve, but as a dangerous enemy. So we have to ask ourselves, like, what price are we willing to pay for the illusion of safety? How many of our liberties are we willing to give up in order for us to feel protected? And why should we be able to protect? Why should we trust these people to protect us? It becomes a dangerous game when the feds get involved in local law enforcement. It's important to try and resist these gifts from the feds. And of course, you know, this goes back to what I've said and what I will continue to say. It is at the utmost important for us to arm ourselves and protect ourselves and be prepared. With that, we are actually going to go to a musical break. I saw Chris Cornell perform over the weekend at the Lincoln Theater in D.C., and it was fantastic. It was about 3 hours long. It was just him, a whole acoustic solo set. It was pretty fantastic. I had never seen Chris Cornell. I'm a little bit younger than their heyday, so I'm coming into it late. But big fan, always have been, so that was definitely a bucket list moment for me. So, actually, we are going to go to Temple of the Dog with Wooden Jesus. Back to Breaking Beltway. So in the last segment, we talked about the militarization of local police, and I asked why we should trust civilian police officers to take on the role as soldier. And my argument is that we can't and we shouldn't. That's not to say we can't trust police officers. I believe that perhaps most of them do their jobs well. However, it's very dangerous, and you put yourself in a very vulnerable position when you don't know your rights. I've become obsessed with North Korea lately, and when I read these couple stories I'm about to talk about, I was shocked because I couldn't believe that something like this was capable of happening in America. On January 2nd, David Eckert finished shopping at a Walmart in Deming, New Mexico. He was pulled over by police for not making a complete stop at a stop sign. And according to the police report, he was asked to step out of the vehicle, and while doing so, he appeared to be clenching his buttocks. And apparently in New Mexico, having a clenched ass is probable cause for a search, because they brought out the drug dog, and they detained the man after the drug dog issued a hit on his car seat. And then they sought a search warrant for an anal cavity search. Police tried to take him to an emergency room in Deming, but a doctor there refused to perform the search. He said that it was unethical. And I'll leave the gory details to KOB4. Take a listen.
Next stop, the Gila Regional Medical Center in Silver City, where doctors there agreed to help. And here's where things go badly for Eckert, very badly. According to court records and medical charts, first, doctors x-rayed Eckert, then penetrated his rectum with their fingers, then performed another exam with their fingers. Doctors then gave Eckert 3 enemas and forced him to defecate in front of them while they searched his stool. All of these things done without consent, all of them finding nothing. But it didn't stop there. Doctors performed a second x-ray. Then they sedated Eckert, prepared him for surgery, and performed a colonoscopy.
This is horrifying, and there are major concerns about the way the search warrant was carried out. The warrant was only valid in Luna County, where Deming is located, but the medical center where all the procedures were performed is in Grant County, which means that all of the medical procedures were performed illegally and against the man's consent. Attorneys representing the defendants in the federal lawsuit and Deming police all declined to comment on the situation. All of them declined to comment. The police chief is like, oh, go to the lawyers. And the lawyer's like, oh, go to the police chief. And none of them are saying a word. And this wouldn't be so disturbing if it didn't happen again in New Mexico, this time to a woman who didn't want to be identified because she considers herself to be a victim of sexual assault.
Another claim of law enforcement violating the most intimate parts of a woman's body. Laura Shower Ives is representing a lifelong New Mexico woman who says she was trying to cross the border from Juarez, Mexico into El Paso.
A dog alerted to her, or at least they claim a dog alerted to her. At that point, Border Patrol agents strip searched her at the facility. They asked her to undress, to spread her genitalia, and to cough. They also pressed their fingers into her vagina looking for drugs.
Now, the ACLU does not want to identify this woman. She considers herself to be a victim of sexual assault and doesn't want to be known yet. However, we do know she's a lifelong New Mexican. She's a woman in her 50s. The woman claims once they didn't discover anything at the port of entry, they took her to University Medical Center of El Paso.
First, staff and Border Patrol observed her bowel movement, and no drugs were found at that point. They then took an x-ray. The x-ray did not reveal any contraband. They then did a cavity search, and they probed her vagina, and they probed her anus. They describe it in the medical records as bimanual, two-handed. They didn't find anything doing that. Finally, they did a CAT scan. Again, they found nothing.
Unlike the incidents in southern New Mexico, the ACLU claims the federal agents never secured a search warrant before probing and touching this woman. And the doctors at this hospital are accused of performing procedures without the patient okaying it.
A disturbing detail about that story is they're not even investigating it. A spokesman for Customs and Border Patrol said that they have not been provided the necessary details in order to investigate. And just doing a quick Google search, I found another story in New Mexico again from this month where another man, Timothy Young, was pulled over during a minor traffic stop. And the same dog, which I forgot to mention is on a certification license that expired 2 years ago, that same dog alerted Young's seat, just like he did the guy before, Eckert, and the man was taken to Gila Regional Medical Center in Silver City, just like Eckert, and he was forced to have x-rays of his stomach and submit to an anal exam. And again, police found nothing. And again, the procedures were done without his consent and in a county not covered by the search warrant. And KOB4 reports that the doctors from this medical center, that they've been turned over to a state licensing board and they could lose their licenses. But, you know, we talked in the last segment about what happens when you give law enforcement too much power. And these incidents in New Mexico, all within the last few months, are indicative of that. It's so dangerous when you have an authoritative law enforcement official in full uniform with a person who maybe doesn't speak great English or has a lower level of education, and you're going to have stories like this. I can't imagine what the conversation must have been like when this went down. How can a person in our country be subjected to this kind of unnecessary search and this violation of privacy? Yeah, this isn't somebody tapping into your phone lines. This is something that started as a traffic violation that turned into being forced at the barrel of a gun to let police officers basically molest you. Imagine being pulled over for speeding and finding yourself being ordered by a judge to undergo surgery and prove you aren't hiding drugs. It's not funny. This is huge, and I hope these victims win a lot of money, and these officers and doctors, and especially the judge that granted this search warrant, they need to get prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. This is America. You know, we can't be doing that here, whether they're citizens or not. We can't be doing that here. We have to set an example. That's ridiculous. Oh, man. What a topic. We're actually going to go to a music break. I'm going to play some Red Hot Chili Peppers. This is Soul to Squeeze.
Take it slow.
Breaking Beltway. I'm Jessica Chasmar. I spoke a little last week about this sick game that inner city blacks are playing all over the country called the knockout game or polar bear hunting. Doug Ernst and I talked about how the media hasn't touched the subject. Well, the media has absolutely pounced on this subject in the last week. The game has been linked to assaults in at least six states. And three people have been killed in suspected knockout violence. It's hard to tell if these knockout attacks that are cropping up had always been happening and are now just being reported, or if these are new attacks based on copycats. I've heard that this practice has been going on for years, so it's possible that attacks all over the country could have been disguised as robberies, but they were really just casualties of polar bear hunting. And polar bear hunting meaning, of course, the act of hunting white people. The story came up the other day that someone had been arrested in connection with one of these recent attacks. Amrit Maraj in Brooklyn was charged with harassment as a hate crime after he allegedly punched an Orthodox Jewish man. The victim said he was walking home early Friday night when he overheard his attackers talking about the knockout game and daring each other to punch him seconds before they actually did. And police arrested four men, but only one was charged with the hate crime. The other three were let go. And now, you know, it's really important that these attacks be treated as hate crimes, because this is a game that we're seeing strictly among inner city black teenagers. And New York City is a unique case because of its large population of Jews, and there have been at least eight anti-Semitic attacks on Jews in the past few weeks, at least, or the past few months, at least five of which were connected to the knockout game, or they're also calling it Get the Jew. I watched Lord of the Flies for the first time the other day, and I had read the book in high school, but quickly forgot about it. But I watched it the other day, so it was like the first time I'd ever seen it, and it reminded me of this knockout game, because it shows how quickly young people can devolve into chaos without adult supervision. These kids who have nothing else better to do with their time and obviously no role model in the home are prowling city streets and betting each other how hard they can hit a defenseless stranger. And they're often targeting women. So what do we do about it? I mean, what do we do about this sick state of affairs where our children act like animals? One solution, well, Republican State Assemblyman Jim Tedisco, he's proposed the Knockout Assault Deterrent Act. And that would classify the knockout game, it would classify knockout game attacks as gang assaults. And it would require offenders to be tried as adults facing prison terms of up to 25 years, whereas currently they would only be facing 4 to 12 years. Because what we're seeing is that these attacks are largely gang-related. Tedesco said that gang members are trying to rack up the most number of knockouts because it becomes a status symbol within their gangs. And Al Sharpton, he's spoken out against the game. During his weekly address in Harlem over the weekend, he called the attacks insane thuggery. And he said, I'm going to quote him, he said, "This kind of behavior is deplorable and must be condemned by all of us. We would not be silent if it was any other way around. We cannot be silent or in any way reluctant to confront when it is coming from our own community. Kids are randomly knocking out people from another race, some specifically going at Jewish people. This kind of insane thuggery, which is nothing, there is nothing cute about that. There is no gameplay about knocking somebody out, and this is not a game. It is an assault and is bias and it is wrong." Now, a lot of people are saying that Al Sharpton didn't go far enough, but I mean, face it, it's Al Sharpton. I give him a lot of credit for saying that this is a racial attack. He have definitely given credit for, you know, acknowledging that this is black-on-white crime and it's often anti-Semitic when it comes to New York. You know, I'm not expecting him to jump through hoops for white rights, you know, but this, you know, this has only been going on, or it's been known to be, you know, it's been blowing up in the media for a week, so, you know, at least he has addressed it. Now, that was just his weekly address in Harlem. Hopefully he will make a more public address. And, you know, if these attacks continue, which I suspect that they will, you know, I let's hope that Al Sharpton does the right thing and addresses the pitfalls of the community he supposedly champions. You know, racism and senseless violence should never be tolerated from anyone. With that said, we're actually going to go to another music break. I talked a little bit about Chris Cornell and how I saw him play this weekend, and he's definitely one of my favorite voices in rock, but one of my number one favorite voices in rock is Layne Staley of Alice in Chains. And him and Jerry Cantrell actually did a little side project called Mad Season. They only put out one CD, but it was fantastic. And they were actually known for this one hit, River of Deceit. So here it is. I hope you enjoy it. You're listening to Breaking Beltway.
is self-chosen. At least I believe it to be. I could either drown or pull off my skin and swim to shore. Can grow a beautiful shell for all to see. The river of deceit flows down, yeah. The only direction we flow is down, down.
And welcome back to Breaking Beltway.
You know, it's funny that we're talking about the knockout game because it's come to my attention that Macklemore, some white dork who grew up in Seattle, one of the whitest cities in America, he decided to use his acceptance speech Sunday night at the American Music Awards to blast what he sees as racial profiling in America. And he specifically named Trayvon Martin. Take a listen.
I was talking to my friend O'War before the show. And he reminded me of a great Martin Luther King quote. He said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And due to the fact that we are in Florida tonight accepting this award, I want to acknowledge Trayvon Martin and hundreds of kids each year that are dying due to racial profiling and the violence that follows it. This is really happening. These are our friends, our neighbors, our peers, and our fans, and it's time that we look out for the youth and fight against racism and the laws that protect it.
Hundreds and hundreds? Really, white boy? Tell me more about what you know about Martin Luther King. I mean, why don't people stand up to this weirdo? It's funny because someone who did stand up to him is Alan West, of all people. He actually wrote in his blog on Monday that Macklemore deserves a stupid award. He said, and I quote, "This is a walking example of the low-information voter. Is he unaware of the knockout game? If Mr. Macklemore is so concerned about his fans, perhaps he should sing more about ending violence, being responsible citizens, getting a better education, and stronger families in the black community." And Alan West, he continued on to say that performers should just stick to what they know, which is performing. And I tend to agree with that statement when it comes to people like Macklemore, who can't even take 10 minutes out of his weed stupor to read a damn newspaper, and he thinks that, you know, Trayvon Martin is the biggest case of racial profiling going on right now. He does deserve the stupid award, and we proudly hand it to him. Anyway, that's it for me, guys. Thanks for listening to another episode of Breaking Beltway. I definitely had fun tonight, and I hope you guys did too. Make sure to subscribe to the show at the iTunes store and enter your email address at breakingbeltway.com to follow my latest updates. And tonight, I'm going to leave you with a little ELO. This is Don't Bring Me Down.